We are on our way. So it's May 14th, which in, let's see, we're not in the Julian calendar, we are in the
Gregorian
calendar, and according to that calendar, this is Israel's Independence Day, but it was celebrated this last week according to the Hebrew calendar. And so let's see, 68 years old, modern state of Israel, as well as Danny's dad, Chuck, who was also born on this day, May
14th,
1948.
But actually, Gary, can I just say something?
Sure.
It's actually is Independence Day today, but so that there's a great Shabbat, they put it backwards or forwards, whatever you term it as. So this actually is the date for the Hebrew calendar as well.
Oh, yeah.
Interesting.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Oh, good.
And we are, let's see, May 14th, 2016. We're looking this morning at Genesis 32, verse 4 through chapter 33, verse 17. And I am open in prayer. Lord, thank you for guiding us here this morning, each one of us, and pray that you would guide us now in your word and its many paths before us, many doors to open. Help us open the right doors. Help us to understand your word, when it was written and what it is for us today. Guide us with your Holy Spirit and help us to have soft hearts to receive your instructions and teaching, and help us to listen and to put it into action. In your name we ask, Jesus. Amen.
Amen.
So we are getting to the end of the Jacob stories here in Genesis, and also his brother Esau, Esav. So let's read here in Genesis 32, verse 4. Maybe, Sally, you want to read the first section there?
Mm-hmm. Up to?
Wherever it feels right.
Okay. Yaakov sent messengers ahead of him to Esav, his brother, toward the land of Seir in the country of Edom, with these instructions. Here is what you are to say to my lord Esav. Your servant Yaakov says, I have been living with Laban and have stayed until now. I have cattle, donkeys and flocks, and male and female servants. I am sending to tell this news to my lord in order to win your favor. The messengers returned to Yaakov saying, we went to your brother Esav, and he is coming to meet you. With him are 400 men.
So Yaakov was greatly afraid and distressed, and he divided the people that were with him, and the flocks and herds and camels, into two companies. And he said, if Esau comes to the one company and attacks it, then the other company, which is left, will escape. Then Yaakov said, O God of my father Abraham, and God of my father Isaac, the Lord who said to me, return to your country and to your family, and I will deal well with you. I am not worthy of the least of all the mercies and of all the truth which you have shown your servant, for I crossed over this Jordan with my staff, and now I have become two companies.
Deliver me, I pray, from the hand of my brother, from the hand of Esau, for I fear him, lest he come and attack me and the mother with the children. For you said, I will surely treat you well and make your descendants as the sand of the sea, which cannot be numbered for the multitude. So he lodged there that same night and took what came to his hand as a present for Esau his brother. 200 female goats and 20 male goats, 200 ewes and 20 rams. 30 milk camels and their colts, 40 cows and 10 bulls, 20 female donkeys and 10 foals. I stopped there, right? We'll continue on to 16.
And going to...
How many verses are we reading?
Just keep going.
Okay.
It's up on the board.
Then he delivered them to the hand of his servants, every drove by itself, and said to his servants, "Pass over before me, and put some distance between successive droves." And he commanded the first one, saying, "When Esau, my brother, meets you, and asks you, saying, 'To whom do you belong, and where are you going? Whose are these in front of you?' Then you shall say, 'They are your servant Jacob's. It is a present sent to my lord Esau, and behold, he also is behind us.'" So he commanded the second, the third, and all who followed the drove, saying, "In this manner you shall speak to Esau, when you find him, and also say, 'Behold, your servant Jacob is behind us.' For he said, 'I will appease him with the present that goeth before me, and afterward I will see his face, perhaps he will accept me.' So the present went on over before him, but he himself lodged that night in the camp."
And he rose up that night, and took his two wives, and his two woman servants, and his 11 sons, and passed over the ford Jacob. And he took them, and sent them over the brook, and sent over that he had. And Jacob was left alone, and they wrestled the man with him until the breaking of the day. And when he saw that he prevailed not against him, he touched the hollow of his thigh, and the hollow of Jacob's thigh was out of joint as he wrestled with him. And he said, "Let me go, for the day breaketh." And he said, "I will not let thee go, except thou bless me." And he said unto him, "What is thy name?" And he said, "Jacob." And he said, "Thy name shall be called no more Jacob, but Israel. For as a prince hast thou power with God and with men, and hast prevailed." And Jacob asked him and said, "Tell me, I pray thee, thy name." And he said, "Wherefore is it that thou dost ask after my name?" And he blessed him there. And Jacob called the name of the place Peniel, "For I have seen God face to face, and my life is preserved." And he passed over Peniel, the sun rose upon him, and he halted upon his thigh. Therefore the children of Israel eat not of the sinew which shrank, which is upon the hollow of the thigh, until this day, because he touched the hollow of Jacob's thigh in the sinew that shrank.
Okay. Jacob looked up, and there was Esau coming with his 400 men. So he divided the children among Leah, Rachel, and the two maidservants. He put the maidservants and their children in front, Leah and her children next, and Rachel and Joseph in the rear. He himself went on ahead and bowed down to the ground 7 times as he approached his brother. But Esau ran to meet Jacob and embraced him. He threw his arms around his neck and kissed him, and they wept. Then Esau looked up and saw the women and children. "Who are these with you?" he asked. Jacob answered, They are the children of God who has graciously given your servant." Then the maidservants and their children approached and bowed down. Next, Leah and her children came and bowed down. Last of all came Joseph and Rachel, and they too bowed down. Esau asked, "What do you mean by all these droves I met?" "To find favor in your eyes, my lord," he said. But Esau said, "I already have plenty, my brother. Keep what you have for yourself." "No, please," said Jacob. "If I have found favor in your eyes, accept this gift from me. For to see your face is like seeing the face of God, now that you have received me favorably. Please accept the present that was brought to you. For God has been gracious to me, and I have all I need." And because Jacob insisted, Esau accepted. Then Esau said, "Let us be on our way. I'll accompany you." But Jacob said to him, "My lord knows that the children are tender, and that I must care for the ewes, the cows, and that are nursing their young.
If they are driven hard just one day, all the animals will die. So let my lord go on ahead with the servant, while I move along slowly at the pace of the droves before me and that of the children, until I come to my lord and the seer. Esau said, "Then let me have some of my men with you. Then let me leave some of my men with you." "Then why do that?" Jacob asked. "Just let me find favor in the eyes of my lord." So that day Esau started on his way back to Seir. Jacob, however, went to Succoth, where he built a place for himself and made shelter for his livestock. That is why the place is called Succoth. After Jacob came from Paddan,
stopping there. Right?
Okay. Yeah. Okay. All right.
Wow.
Okay.
Read Obadiah?
Well, not yet. So let's talk about what we just read. What's the situation? What's the setting of this section?
Can I just mention something? When we read verse 28, "Thy name shall be called no more Jacob, but Israel, for as a prince hast thou power with God and with men, and hast prevailed." The fact that he was called Israel on the day of Israel's birth.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that. Good.
Yeah.
Good. So what's the context here?
That Jacob has been told by God to go back to his land. He's heard God saying that to him.
Right.
And so he's now obeying in some way that instruction.
So the story is, we'll just step back even further over the last weeks, and Jacob and Esau are born, and then Jacob has stolen his birthright and his blessing, and he's run away, right? His mother.
You need the coastline for us to realize that's a Dead Sea in the Kinneret instead of a balloon and a peanut.
So he goes over and he crosses up here somewhere. He might be a little further north. And he goes to where?
Paddan Aram.
Which is where today?
Syria,
right? So where all the civil war, all the fighting is going on. In the Bible, it's called Aram, which is another word for Syria. That's what the Greeks called it, Syria. And so it's up in this area. I mean, it's much further, but in that general direction. And now he's coming back. Where does Esau live? Like, traditionally, what are his different names?
Edom,
Seir. So where is that geographical?
South and east.
Yeah.
Okay. Not this is traditionally,
yeah.
Which today is Jordan. Basically. So as they're coming down, he's coming back with his four wives, two wives, two maidservants. Where do they come to? Where they're going to meet Esau? What's it? We have a couple names there.
Peniel, Mahanaim, Yabok, the river.
Okay, Mahanaim is going to be up. It'll be one of the first places, and then he's going to come. Remember Sukkot?
Yeah.
Is that last one we just read? And he crossed the Yabok, right?
Yeah.
Which is a river here. I don't think it's a real river. I think
it's a Nahal, right?
It just flows when there's rain, and it might have a little.
Yeah, I think it's Nahal.
It's a Middle Eastern river. So he's going to cross over in Yabok, and
Hebrew water.
What?
It was water.
It's a little stream. Like, yeah, exactly. It's a little, but
does it always have water? That's the question. Or just the raining season?
Is Yud Bet Kuf. And so this is the area. Now, going back to his story, before he went up here, where did he stop on his way out of the land?
Bet El,
which traditionally is considered on this side of the Jordan. Betin is an Arab village today. And what happened to Bet El? There were the angels, right? And I talked about this a few weeks ago, about there's many words of angels, many appearances of this idea. An angel, the Hebrew word, really means what?
Messenger.
Messenger. Okay. And it's the same in Greek, too. Greek is the word is angelos. The original idea is a messenger, someone who's sent, taking a message, right? Like, usually from a king or someone. So we've got Malach. Something like that, and the transliteration, and then angelos is what we have in the Greek. And so sometimes in the Bible you have to be able to differentiate between, are we talking about a human person here, or are we talking about a heavenly person? And so that's where all the interpretation comes into. Just go back to Genesis 28 real quick, just to point out a few of those examples. Okay, so first off, Genesis 28, verse 12, says that there were messengers of God, which is always translated angels of God, going up and down that staircase or the ramp or whatever you want to call the sulam there. And then later on, in
with Lavan last week, we all said Malachi Elohim.
Yeah, what's Lavan say? Or
well, is it one of his dreams?
It's in 31.
Yeah.
Do you want to find it? And I'll let's see here. Okay. Then another example of angels here associated with Jacob would be in chapter... Okay, you were talking about 31 verse 11, right?
Probably, yeah.
So, 31 verse 11. You want to read that?
And the angel of the Lord said to me in a dream, Jacob, and I said, here I am.
Okay, so an angel comes to Jacob in a dream. Which is interesting. That's... I don't know, it almost sounds like Daniel, stories of Daniel, right?
Mm-hmm.
In Genesis 48, verse 16. Genesis 48, verse 16. Want to read that?
Who?
You can, anyone. Genesis 48, 16.
The angel who has redeemed me from all harm, may he bless these boys, and may they be called by my name and the names of my
family. So Jacob here is praying over who? Manasseh and Ephraim. And he's almost talking about a personal guardian angel here. It's interesting. It's not given as a big story in the Genesis story, but he's alluding to it. Very interesting. What we, chapter 32, it's not in our section today, but in verse 1, if you start reading there, what's it say?
32.
chapter 32, verse 1. What's it say?
Jacob also went on his way, and the angels of God met him.
Yeah. Angels of God, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Keep going.
When Jacob saw them, he said, "This is the camp of God." So he named that place Mahanaim.
Right, so here's Mahanaim. Name is coming from this point where the angels of God meet him. And then what's interesting is the next verse. Keep going.
Jacob sent messengers ahead of him to his brother Esau in the land of Seir, the country of Edom.
Okay, so stop here. What's interesting about the Hebrew here, or the translation?
Sent messengers.
They're, it's the same word. The angels of God met him, and then he sends angels ahead of him. I mean, here it's translated messengers. But you could make the argument, maybe he sent the angels ahead of him here. It's the same word, malachim. So it's...
But then the funny thing is when he wrestles, it's not a malach, it's an ish.
Right, well, we'll get to that. We'll get to that. So, and anyways.
But in English, it's a capital M for man.
It's a man. Oh, okay. That makes all the difference.
So I want to keep this in mind as we're talking about this section today of Jacob's angelic world. It's interesting. He has something going on here with angels. I want to call them that.
That's back to 28. When we were reading that, it said the angels were ascending and descending.
Right.
So it meant that the angels were actually with him because they couldn't go up if they hadn't been down already.
Right. Right. Yeah, there's all kinds of readings about what are these angels, why do they keep going up and down, what's their purpose. So that's, for example, in the book of Daniel, what's the purpose, what are angels called there? In, say, chapter 10 of Daniel, chapter 11, do you recall the story? There's two angels that are given names in Daniel for the first time. They never have names until you get to the book of Daniel.
One of them is fighting with the ruler of darkness in order to...
The ruler of Greece and Persia, they're both...
Michael and...
So Michael is fighting, and who is... And Gabriel, thank you. And then we know those two obviously from the New Testament because they appear there... Like in the book of Jude says, what does it say about Michael?
He fought for the body of Moses.
Right. Yeah. He's fighting who?
Satan
for the body of Moses, which actually comes from another Jewish text. And Gabriel is very involved. Right. Uh-huh.
That's in Daniel.
Yeah, it's
I just want to point out, Valerie's comment was that it says Olim veYordim. So the Olim comes first.
They were on the earth.
Yeah. So I just want to point that out.
Right. And there's all kinds of midrash or interpretation about that. But yeah, it's very good.
In another quote in scripture, it says the angel of the Lord encampeth round about those that fear him.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah,
that's...
They're
all in the ground. Yeah. Right, and you have... What does Jesus say about angels? I mean, he says a lot, but there's one connection with children. What's he say?
Your angel is always standing in front of the Father.
Right, for these little ones. Okay. Right, and so you have this idea, and then you start to develop this theology of guardian angels. I think it's big in the Catholic Church, but... You can see kind of the roots of these things here in the text.
Is there any kid that didn't grow up in a Christian home without his parents telling you that you had guardian angels around you when you were tucked in bed at night?
When you were scared of the monsters?
Yeah.
Well, there's angels plural and there's guardian angels singular.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Slight variations on the theme.
You're saying that comes from that verse, I think?
Yeah, for sure. And it's even before that in other Jewish writings from the Second Temple period.
Even the Lord himself is saying he could have called upon legions of angels.
Right.
But at that point, he knew that he was to carry through his assignment.
Yep.
And then the angels came and ministered to him.
Yep.
That's important.
And Revelation 2 talks about Michael, right?
Yeah.
I believe he's fighting with the dragon. That's in there, right? Let's see.
Revelation 2, you say?
I think it's
Revelation also.
Isn't it 12? Let's see here.
If you don't know.
Oh, it's somewhere in the back.
Revelation 12, 7.
Yeah, there. Can you read it?
And war broke out in heaven. Michael and his angels fought with the dragon. And the dragon and his angels fought, but they did not prevail. There was a place bound for them in heaven anymore.
Yeah. And so Michael seems to be the fighter, the big warrior. And then Gabriel. What is kind of more of his job in Daniel and in the New Testament? What does Gabriel do?
As for messaging.
He's a messenger for who?
God.
But which specific important job did he bring a message?
Messiah.
The Messiah, right?
Yes.
He came to Mary and he came to Zechariah, right? Telling about John the Baptist being born and Jesus being born.
Yeah.
So those are kind of like the two main angels that we have in our Christian New Testament, specifically Protestant background. In Catholic tradition, you have a few other angels with names, which comes from the Apocrypha. And basically, the Apocrypha is just three other Jewish writings that are part of the world at that time, like Uriel and Raphael and a couple others. Anyways, this Bible study is not about angels. This is a tangent. Going back to Daniel about angels, what are they called in Daniel 10, Daniel 11?
Gabriel is a man.
And also, what does Gabriel tell Daniel? I got stopped by who? What was the name that he gave him?
The prince
of Persia, prince of Greece, prince. And that's
why our prayers get held up sometimes.
Right, that's right. And what's in Hebrew, what's prince?
Sa.
Okay. It's kind of like a ruler.
Or a minister.
Minister, someone high up in the government. Which makes sense for an angel. So, let's go back to our text. Genesis 32. And I'm sure we could talk about a lot of things here with Esau, with Jacob's psychological challenges with Esau. But let's just go ahead and skip to the most famous part, which Valerie brought us to, Genesis 32.
28.
Well, before we get there, let's give it a couple more verses. Let's go to verse 23. He took them and sent them across the stream along with all of his possessions. Okay, stream here, this is the Nahal, so it's not some little... It
says crossing, right? Ma'avar Yabok.
Yeah. It's a gorge. Yes. But Yabok is basically, it's Yabok. All right. And, in verse 24, in the Hebrew and the English are off here, I think, Sharon, by a verse. So I was referring to 20.
Yeah, you're right. No, there's Nahal.
Yeah, so there's Nahal there.
He keeps talking about crossing over.
Okay, so verse 24 in the English, verse 25 in the Hebrew. Jacob is alone. He's by himself. And what happens?
Well, obviously he was not alone.
There's what?
He was not
alone. Obviously there's a misprinter. He was not alone.
Right, right.
There are two people here, and they seem to end up assaulting and battering each other. What place is this? It's not like
Massachusetts. Right. Well, this is like a great movie, right? Because it says he's left alone, and then boom, there's a fight. So it's like he got jumped.
And it's in the middle of the night. So everything's dark. You probably don't know who just jumped on you.
And who? Well, how do we know? Did Jacob jump on this guy, or did that guy jump on Jacob? We don't know.
Well, it says a man struggled with him, so it could imply that he jumped on Jacob.
Like, why did they struggle? And in the Hebrew, it just says ish.
It's Yavek ish imo. The guy wrestled with him.
Yeah.
So you think that guy...
He was the bad guy jumping
him. Okay, Jacob's name
is... It's like this. In Hebrew, Yud, Ayin, Kuf. And they just cross the Yabok, which is Yud, Bet, Kuf. Okay, so this is Yaakov, Yabok.
And what did they do?
Yaavik.
Yaavik. Nevak, yeah. So it's a Nifal here.
But in the Vahaypuch, it's Yeh.
Vayeavek. No, Aleph.
Yeah, Yeavek. Yeavek. If anything, we have some beautiful
poetry.
Right, in poetry, literary style.
So that the V in Yaakov could be a V to show the English.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, if you want to do it.
This is a V. So you can see the crossing of the letters here, or the switching. Yaabok and Yaavek are basically the same, except it has an Aleph here. And Yaakov has an Ayin. So they're different words. They're not related at all etymologically. But as far as the way they sound similar or alliterative. So this is what he's doing with him. And it's an ish.
The Yaabok and Yaavek could be like an onomatopoeia. They're like hitting each other.
Right.
I mean the sound of... Yeah. So... Like this word for wrestling or struggling, Yaavek, it only appears here from what I could find. And in verse 24 and in verse 25, and the whole Bible is just here.
Can I just mention a thought that just came to my mind?
Yeah.
When Balaam was going the way he should have been going.
Who?
Balaam.
Uh-huh.
Then an angel stood in front with a sword in his hand, but he didn't see it until his eyes were open.
Yeah, good. We're going to go in that direction.
Get Valerie's ahead of the curve.
That's right. Okay, so what's it say there in verse 25?
He could not defeat him.
You can't,
but what's the verb, the first verb?
Oh, sorry.
When he saw. Okay, in the English, what does it say? When who saw?
When the man saw.
In the Hebrew, what's it say?
When he saw that he couldn't, he wasn't able.
Right. You could basically say it was the man who saw, because he touched his thigh and he wounded him or did something to him. But it's not so clear cut.
Well, what's not clear that it's the man who saw? Are you saying it could be Jacob who saw?
I'm saying, yeah. I would argue it probably is the man who saw here, this mysterious man.
Right.
just because of the continuation of the sentence.
Exactly. But I'm just offering this out there. Mm-hmm. What if it's like what Valerie said? Mm-hmm. What if it's Jacob saw? Mm-hmm. His eyes are opened to his situation. Mm-hmm. Because...
And Jacob touches the man's...
yeah. No, I'm kind of going in a more mystical...
Well, it could be. If he can't overcome him, so he does something to his thigh to try to stop him.
Right.
And so at that point, the same thing happens to him.
Right, but then it says Jacob limps out of there, right?
No, what I'm saying is because he did it to the angel, it's done to him back.
Okay.
You could read it that way. Uh-huh. So he gets the same thing done to him and ends up with a limp.
They basically...
It's midah connected midah.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Once you go to that extreme, you can start to get anything.
Sure. But what I'm trying to point out here is that...
Not anything.
They don't... Neither one of them wins. Even though that's his name later on, he struggles, fights with God, and has overcome... Men, in this case, in this situation, this is a
it ends in a draw,
stalemate, something like that.
And your other point is that when he saw that he couldn't overcome him, these are all pronouns, and he touched his thigh.
Right.
The only time you know for sure is when it says, "And Jacob's thigh sunk in."
Right. Exactly.
So then you know Jacob's thigh sunk in, and you can fill in the other pronouns, but the other pronouns are still just he and him.
Right.
Yeah, but of course there's an implication here, isn't there? Because the implication is that the other guy could have won any time he liked. He could have cheated.
Right, right.
Or he's already cheated.
Yeah.
And he touched the actually can't beat them.
Yeah.
He still a chance.
Right.
Yeah, that's the whole irony of the story, that he didn't have to just touch his thigh, he could have touched him in the head and killed him.
And why did Jacob have to send him off?
Yes.
You know? Oh, send me off now because it's almost morning. Like so?
And he also asked for a blessing from this guy.
Yeah.
What's that all about?
The irony is the wrestling at all. Like, why would you, what's the point of God making you wrestle with him? I think that's the...
Right.
Well, I think what I heard before is that God didn't want Jacob to go further because he was transformed in some way and had this limp and was therefore not relying on his own strength, but on God's strength.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's a good interpretation.
How is he relying on God's strength?
Because he's got a limp now.
Okay.
He's physically...
How is he relying on God?
He would have to.
Oh, he has to now. Because
He couldn't wrestle his brother and win.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's the irony. He's sitting there in the middle of the night thinking that this must be someone from Esau's camp attacking him.
Probably.
Right? Because he's afraid of Esau. Mm. And he's assuming Esau would like to kill him. He's hoping he doesn't want to.
So let's make a list of who this person could be.
No, but he very quickly realizes that this is someone otherworldly because he's wrestling and the first thing the guy says is "Let me go because it's daybreak." Okay, they've been wrestling all night and now the sun's coming up.
So he's a vampire.
And this is the first time that this is the first time we have any indication that he's talking. But then, the first thing that Jacob says is, "I'm not letting you go until you've blessed me." So he realizes.
But that's after he's touched his thigh.
Yes, it's at the end of the rest.
So he probably realizes he got zapped somewhat supernaturally.
No, before he touches his thigh.
No.
No, it's after.
After.
Oh, you're right. You're right.
And
you're right.
Blessing, so, what does a blessing really mean? I mean, his father blessed him. He's a human.
He wants another one.
Oh, I know, but you know, fathers bless sons. It's part of the culture.
Yeah, but you don't ask a thief to bless you. I'm not going to let you go until you bless me.
But you don't know...
If you turn to Hosea, there's a cross-reference to the book of Hosea.
Yeah, hold on.
Wait, first, I just want to give a list of who we think this person could be based on the circumstances. Okay, so go ahead, just start shooting them
from off. Esau's camp. Let's say a messenger of Esau.
A man of Esau.
His dad come back to life.
Yeah, okay. Also, if it's a man from Esau, why can't it just be Esau?
Could be.
Because that's who he's...
Sure.
Because look what happens.
Because he wasn't hairy enough.
No. Look what happens. At the end of his fight, look at that.
No, he asks him what his name is.
Yeah, he doesn't tell him.
Yeah, but so that shows he doesn't know who he is. He knows it's not Isaac.
Wait, how long has it been since he's seen Esau?
I'm saying he's not hairy enough.
Anyways, but look what happens at the end of the fight.
Right. Okay.
Verse 32, he struck. That is why to this day the Israelites don't eat this part of the body, right? What's the very next verse say?
Because he struck
James. Here comes Esau.
Here comes Esau. He looked up and he saw that Esau was coming. Verse 1.
Yeah.
Anyways, I don't think it was Esau, but I'm just trying to say there is a bit ambiguity there.
And all of a sudden he's with his wives and children again.
Yeah.
You mean in that verse?
In verse chapter 33.
Yeah. Okay, who else came? Obviously, angel is the number one. That's the one that everyone historically leans towards.
Well, I think God himself.
Say God himself?
Yeah, because he changed his name to Israel, which means he rebuilt with God.
Okay. So,
and that's what he says. I wrestled with God, or I saw God's face and didn't die.
Yeah, it's just weird because Moses says no one can see God's face and live, right?
Well, same thing with Manoach's wife when she sees the angel and she names the place Shalom, and she explains it because we've seen the face of God and we still have peace.
Yeah. An angel represents God.
Yeah, an angel, any divine being is representative.
He names the place face of God.
Right.
Peniel.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and some Christians have even seen this as Jesus, mm-hmm. before pre-incarnate Jesus is what they will say. But
he also later says to Esau that you are like the face of God. There's all kinds of word plays around face and God in this whole section. Obviously, playing off of where they are or where they're near.
Yeah, but where else did Jacob see God face to face?
Where else? Yeah. Beit El?
Because
there it says Adonai. Adonai was standing
by him.
On him, and the him there we're assuming is either the ladder or right next to Jacob himself.
He names this place Peniel, and then right after he says, for I have seen God face to face.
Right.
So this is where we come to his new name, Valerie, because we're running out of time here. he asked, where are we at?
28, verse 28.
Yes. What is your name? Verse 27, what is your name? In the Hebrew, it's verse 28. And he says, Yaakov. And everybody knows Yaakov is given in the Bible as related to, you know, the heel, right? Because he was the heel catcher of his brother when he was born.
That's in Hosea.
In Isaiah?
Hosea,
yeah, right. Here we go, we're going there.
But then also, Esau is the first to point out, truly you're named Yaakov because you deceived me.
Right.
Like, so he twists.
Yeah.
He finds the other meaning of the word.
So verse 28 in English, no longer will your name be Jacob, but Israel, because you have fought with God and with men and have prevailed. So, the name Israel.
Israel. And they say, because you have fought Sarita, let's see, Sarita im Elohim ve'im Anashim ve'tucha.
Ve'tucha.
Okay, so you have fought What does this mean, you fought with God and man and have prevailed?
Well, with men, I suppose, refers to Laban.
Refers to the...
Laban, his relationship with Laban.
Okay. Yeah. Could be. Yeah, I mean, he's fought with a lot of people, right? Esau, he'll keep fighting, actually. But does it mean that he's fought against God?
Or with God?
Is it referring to this man that he's been struggling with all night? Because on one hand, that's how you can read it. Sorry?
Except here it's plural, with men, as if this is...
Sure, but I'm talking about the Elohim part.
Yeah.
Because on one hand, in the Hebrew, you can read it like he's fought against God, like this man. But on the other hand, it can be fought alongside God.
Yeah.
Like you fought together.
It seems like alongside.
Well, if you turn to Hosea, that
okay.
The answer.
Sorry, what were you going to say?
Hosea 11, and verse 2, 3, and 4.
No, Hosea 12.
Well, 11.
11?
Oh, sorry, 12.
It's 12, yeah. If you go to Hosea 12, which ironically is not in our Haftarah today, verse 2. The Lord also has a covenant lawsuit against Judah. He will punish Jacob according to his ways and repay him according to his deeds. So this is what Valerie's talking about. In the womb, he attacked his brother. Let me find that. Yeah. Akav et Achiv.
Mm-hmm.
He attacked his brother, and in his manly vigor, he struggled with God.
Wait, where are you reading?
Hosea 12:4 in the Hebrew.
Okay.
12:3 in the English. In the womb, and by his strength he had carved God.
Oh, yeah, but Akav and Sarah come into this.
Yeah, he struggled, he fought with, strived. And in the next verse?
Sarah.
Yeah, he had power over the angel and prevailed. He wept and made supplication unto him. He found him in Bethel.
So Hosea's kind of mixed things together. He brings in Beit El here, which is from Genesis 28. That's an earlier story.
Mm-hmm.
But here, he's definitely talking about 32. And here, Hosea definitely understands this to be an angel. That's what it says. Unless you want to see it as a messenger of Esau. But definitely, it's more of an angel here in Hosea's interpretation, because in Genesis just says each, just says man, a man. It's very anonymous and no name there.
It's also, if you reading in this context, if you jump back to chapter 11:9, it says, I won't do my anger. I won't destroy again Ephraim. Ki el anochi velo ish. Because I'm God and not a man.
Mm-hmm.
It's just interesting in the context.
And the cross-reference here is to Ephesians, where it says we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Since we're almost out of time here, I want to just go to the name, which was another lead-in of Valerie. Yisrael, so it says you struggle with God, and so what they see here is Sar is the struggle or the wrestle part, and El, everyone knows that is Elohim with God. That's where they have this name meaning from. But there's also been an interpretation from Septuagint and other sources. Septuagint was the Greek translation in the time of Jesus, where they saw this as Israel as Ish Ra'el. And you have to add an Aleph in there and all of this stuff. But,
well, the Aleph doubles up.
Yeah. Well, I'll sum up.
Yeah.
That one.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you're right. Doubles up here.
Well, in the same way,
man saw God, is what it is. And it, in other words, there's this fight, but the fight is something that's inside of you. It's something that you have to struggle with to see God, to understand Him. And Philo, actually, is probably the earliest source of this. Philo was a Jewish philosopher who lived in Egypt about 50 years before Jesus. And he also points this out. And this actually opens up a lot of opportunities for the early church to say, well, we're the new Israel because we see God. We've seen His Son. We understand God. So on one hand, you can take this interpretation can go off in a bad direction, but it's also, there's something good here too. When you think about daily faith and the necessity of, we all struggle, I would think, with our faith. If we don't, then we're not really using it, because it's not a philosophy or some idea that we can pack off on a shelf. We have to like struggle every day with how we live and the choices we make, and seeing God in those situations, even when it's easy just to pretend, well, God's not here, I can just do whatever I want. And I think Jacob's story is a good reminder of how real it is on a physical sense, and kind of like Valerie saying with Ephesians, that we struggle not with flesh and blood, but with principalities and powers, that even though our lives are very real and empirical and things we touch are real, there is this spiritual side of the world that is also real. And
unseen, maybe
unmeasurable in our scientific terms, but it's there. And this is kind of the story the Bible is telling us throughout. So anyways, we didn't read Obadiah or Isaiah, but maybe we do that another time.
It's kind of nice with Yaakov, because he's not the spiritual type, you know what I'm saying? He's very real, and he's very wants to cut a deal or see how to...
He's very practical.
He's very practical. And yet he's the one that keeps bumping into angels all the time. You know, it's like... it's funny.
Not mystic.
Yeah, he's not mystic at all.
And also, just to compare his name, Jacob and Israel, both names, in a sense, are kind of... you could see connected to the idea of wrestling, if you want to play with the alliteration here. Of Beck here and Sarah here. So, and on one hand, he's going to keep wrestling his whole life, or struggling, or fighting, surviving. And but here, you could also see Sa'ad. What did we say Sa'ad was with Daniel?
Prince.
It's another word for angel in Daniel, prince, but that you have these guardian angels, like utilize what God's giving you to help you. You know, God is helping you struggle and fight. You're not on your own. You're not by yourself. And so, anyway, Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat Shalom.